Between the Rows podcast is brought to you by Glacier Farm Media and sponsored by FCC Ag Expert.
Hey, do you know what's new and improved? Ag Expert software.
What's that?
Ag Expert? It's field and accounting software designed for Canadian agriculture.
No, that's sparkle sound.
When I say Ag Expert?
Yeah, that.
Well, Ag Expert Field helps you manage your farm. And Ag Expert Accounting is the accounting software in Canadian agriculture. But it's so new and improved, it still has that sparkle to it.
Mm-hmm. Can I use it on my phone?
Of course. It's built for modern agriculture. Try it for free at agexpert.ca.
Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Spencer Myers of Glacier Farm Media and the Manitoba Cooperator. On today's show, we hear from Manitoba Cooperator reporter Alexis Stockford about the flooding conditions in the Brandon and Rivers, Manitoba area, what it means for the local infrastructure and that area's farmers. At the end of the show, we'll be joined by Bruce Burnett, Director of Markets and Weather with Glacier Markets Farm, and he'll tell us about what's going on in northern Alberta, what's happening in the southern United States Corn Belt, and what to expect in this week's WASD report. But first, here's a piece of a conversation between Canadian Cattleman editor Lisa Gunther and John Jamieson, the president and CEO of the Canadian Centre for Food Integrity. Here they talk about the Guardians of the Grasslands film, and their full conversation can be heard during the Ag in Motion Discovery Plus virtual farm show being held this year on July 21st through 25th. Here's some of what they had to say about this film.
Hi, I'm Lisa Gunther, editor of Canadian Cattleman magazine, and I'm here today with John Jamieson of the Canadian Centre for Food Integrity. We're going to discuss the Guardians of the Grasslands documentary and what others can take away from this ag advocacy effort from the beef industry. Maybe to start off with, John, can you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi, Lisa. I work in Guelph with the Canadian Centre for Food Integrity, as you mentioned. Our organization is our mandate is to work with industry organizations to connect with consumers and tell the story behind the Canadian food system and why it is why we should be proud of what we do and why we have one of the best food systems in the world. I've been here about a year, actually. I actually started a year this week with the organization. Prior to that, I worked in Prince Edward Island, where I'm from, and I was a deputy minister in agriculture and fisheries.
Great. So I guess just to start off with, John, when you look at a film like Guardians of the Grasslands, which was produced by beef producers, conservationists, what can the rest of the agriculture industry take away from a project like that?
I think the key thing they can take away from it is the collaboration piece. And also the openness and transparency piece, which I think is extremely important. We know from some of the research that the Canadian Centre for Food Integrity puts together that Canadians do not know a lot about our food system, and they know very little about modern food production. But the key piece is they want to know more. And by creating an engaging, very visual film like Guardians of the Grassland, I think the whole industry can learn a lesson in that you've created a product that is informing and educating the Canadian public, but doing it in a very visual, very, very entertaining way. And I think that's a key lesson that I would take from this, is that what we do in our food system is very interesting. It's interesting to people all across the world, actually. But it's also very visual, and it lends itself well to film. It lends itself well to social media like Facebook and Instagram. And a project like this, I think, really sets the bar for others to follow and engage the Canadian public.
So you mentioned the collaboration, and there is collaboration between different groups in the film. Is that something that you think lent some credibility to this project?
Yeah, for sure. I actually think that's a key message that comes out of the project, is the collaboration and work with environmental groups and farmers. And the important piece is that when you think of the two groups, you know, the farmers or Ducks Unlimited or some of the other groups mentioned, they have shared values. And the shared values being the protection of the grasslands, the protection of species at risk, the protection of our ecosystem. So when you're approaching things with these shared values, then it lends itself to that collaboration and you will actually get things done. You know, if you look at, for example, Ducks Unlimited have a really long history of working with farmers across Canada. And they recognized very early in their history that by working with farmers, you can achieve many things. So they have much more habitat available for the animals that they advocate for. They have a stronger population of birds in Canada and the U.S. because a lot of the birds they do their you know, they nest here in Canada and they travel to the U.S. in the wintertime or other countries. But having that collaboration helps achieve results, but also speaks to the authenticity to the consumer who says, "Wow, you know, these folks may have different agendas, but they can work together to achieve common results." And I think that's a pretty important piece in the film.
Another thing I was wondering was, when you think of a project like this, I don't think they were necessarily gearing it just towards the general public, which is a very a broad audience.
Yeah.
And to me, it seems important to gear it towards a more specific audience. But what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think, there's a couple of audiences that are important. I think the first one being the ranchers and farmers themselves. And it does a really good job of making people feel good about what they do. And I think if we feel good about what we do and we're confident in what we do, then we project that confidence and that strong image to the people that buy our product. The other key audience, I think, are people who are interested in environmental issues and understanding the commitment of both the farmers and the environmental organizations to moving forward. So there's a couple of, I think, you know, the farm community itself is a really important audience. Environmental folks are an important audience, and the other ones I think are, you know, if we think about an important audience, it'd be, you know, for example, ladies between the ages of 35 and 44 who are, you know, interested in the Canadian food system, where their food comes from. You know, that's an important target. So I think the film touches on a lot of audiences, and I think resonates with different people, and I think that it does that very well. And, you know, obviously from the reception it's had, we know it does that very well.
Yeah, now getting back more, I guess, towards the collaboration, do you see a need or perhaps an opportunity for more collaboration between different sectors in agriculture?
Yeah, I think one of the things that we do well in ag is speaking from our own standpoint and telling our own story about our particular commodity or group that we're connected to. I think where we can do a better job is working in collaboration or working as a system to talk about the Canadian food system and all the different parts of it, and thinking about themes in that that we can all speak from. For example, food safety and health, or climate change and environment. I think we all play a role in improving those particular areas. So I think if we speak from a food system and help the general public understand that, you know, our Canadian food system is robust because it's a number of parts that work well together. And it works well together because we have, as we mentioned earlier, those shared values. And those values, for example, a commitment to improving the environment and to improve, you know, better animal welfare or those types of things. I think if we speak from a system-wide approach, not saying that each individual organization can't say their piece, but I think if we speak on some overarching issues as a group, I think we'll have better traction with the consumer. And the other thing I would add is the Canadian public or that are the people around the world that are buying our products, they don't expect perfection. And if we can message to them that we're on a path of continuous improvement, or we are progressing, you know, they do expect progress, not perfection. And I think that's important for us to remember. And sometimes we need to take our hat in hand a little bit and say, you know, we can do a little better on this, but we are working toward it. And I think that resonates with the public, because in our own lives, we're always trying to do something in our lives better. And by being authentic and saying, you know, we're doing our best here, we're improving daily, we're working toward a common goal, I think we can do a better job of connecting and building that trust, which is really important as we grow our industry.
That was a section of a conversation between Lisa Gunther, editor of Canadian Cattlemen magazine, and John Jameson, the president and CEO of the Canadian Centre for Food Integrity. You can hear their full conversation during the Egg in Motion Discovery Plus virtual farm show being held this year, July 21st through 25th. Joining me now is Alexis Stockford, a reporter with the Manitoba Cooperator. She lives in Brandon, Manitoba, and she's seen firsthand some of the damage to the Brandon area, and she's going to tell us what's going on in that area and what farmers are saying. Alexis, thanks for coming on the show today.
Hey, Spencer. Great to be here.
So first off, we'll jump right into it. It's made a lot of headlines over the last week, and anyone living in the area, it's unavoidable. Brandon area, the rivers area of western Manitoba, has seen a boatload of rain, and I can say that quite literally, over the last couple weeks. So Alexis, can you tell us about the rain that happened last week and what you've heard so far about how that's affecting the infrastructure, and then we'll get into how that's affecting the local farmers?
Yeah, well, it was certainly dramatic last week, not only because of one storm, but as sort of like a string of storms throughout the week. There was that one very big storm, of course, on Sunday, the 28th, that sort of sparked everything off. But then we had a number of other rainfalls over the coming days. And it just kind of got to the point that you were looking at the radar and every day, and you're just sort of like, oh, come on, right? And I remember at one point, I'm in Brandon, and we're hearing about the rivers dam and the pressure on it and the evacuations that had happened downstream, because the province had said that they had lost confidence in the dam. And a day or so after that, in the evening, I was watching this, once again, fairly large thunderstorm just skimming the west part of Brandon, and it was just making a beeline for the same area, and you were just seeing, you're like, oh no, you know. But yeah, in terms of what we were seeing here, yeah, that that Monday, the after the first storm, the results were fairly dramatic. There were already widespread road closures, widespread road washouts. The Trans-Canada Highway was closed for a period of time. Number 10 highway, which goes north of Brandon and connects Minnedosa and Brandon, was also closed for a large period of time. And just driving through the area, you know, you saw fields that had become lakes. You saw ditches that had, you know, that were suddenly like something out of whitewater rafting. It was very dramatic.
What are area farmers saying about this vicious storm and the few storms afterwards to follow throughout the week? What damage has been done maybe to their crops, their bins, etc.? What are the farmers saying?
Well, I mean, there were a number, like there was property damage in that rivers area from wind damage, because they of course had a tornado touchdown. And so, you know, you were hearing about some damage in terms of bins and such out there. In terms of flooding, yeah, there was a lot of farmers that saw a number of acres go underwater, many acres go underwater. And in terms of crop damage, in a lot of ways, I think that's still being assessed. Like the water is just getting to the point where it is starting to drain away, where farmers can get out there and assess what kind of damage there is. I spoke to a farmer today who basically said that he estimated that, you know, 5 to 10% of his crops are probably going to be drowned out, but the damage was very variable depending on what kind of crop you were talking about. You know, the soybeans, sunflowers, they're probably okay. Canola was a little bit of a mixed bag, depending on the field history and where like the geographic location of the field. Crops such as peas are expected to take way more of a hit. They're looking very poor at this point. The bigger issue, though, is infrastructure, I think, because as anyone who's tried to navigate in that area north of Brandon towards Minnedosa and Nipawa in the last couple of weeks has realized, navigation has become very difficult. Because of there are so many road washouts and dramatic road washouts, like road is gone, culvert is 300 meters downstream type washouts, it's very difficult to find your way around, right? Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to access your fields. And that is potentially the longer term issue. And especially when you, like I talked to a number of farmers right after the storm, and they raised the point that realistically, we're actually not that far away from harvest when you're looking at this amount of widespread damage. And, you know, are the RMs going to be able to get in there and fix some of these very dramatic washouts before people want to run combines down them, right? And even just in terms of spraying, because the unfortunate thing is that when you're looking at fungicide timing, this storm or this string of storms has kind of lined up with that a little bit. If you're looking at Manitoba Agriculture and Resource Development, their Fusarium head blight risk maps show an extreme risk in the western part of the province right now. You've got canola growers that are looking at sclerotinia, et cetera. And for some of those farmers, they just can't get to their fields right now. And if they can get to their fields right now, a lot of them are far too wet to spray. And actually, as a consequence of that, I've spoken to a number of aerial application type companies this week, and they have all noted that they are very, very busy, that they're running flat out. And in one case, that they are actually bringing in extra planes. And in all cases, they're saying that they have way more demand than they can realistically meet right now.
Okay, Alexis, most of our conversation has been revolving around the Brandon Rivers area and the damage to the crops and the infrastructure there. Let's take a look at the rest of the province. You were saying earlier that there are some areas that obviously weren't as affected by these extreme weather systems moving through. So can you tell us how the rest of the province is looking right now? What are some issues that producers in other areas are dealing with?
Yeah, and you know, and like you said, we've kind of focused on that sort of Brandon, Minnedosa, that area of the Southwest, because it was very dramatic last week. But you know, if you look at the rainfall maps, outside of that very dramatic patch, and outside of the East, which has also seen some significant rainfall in the last couple of weeks, there are still areas that are significantly below their usual percentage of rainfall for this time of year. And in a lot of these areas, they were critically dry prior to these last couple of weeks, and these storms haven't really changed all that much. Even if they've dropped a little bit of rain, it's just kind of been a drop in the bucket. And if you look at some of the areas, such as like the Southern Interlake, which has seen very little rainfall even out of these string of storms, there were some significant issues up there in terms of hay, in terms of pasture burning off already, even though it's just July. And I don't necessarily know that those issues have abated, even given how dramatic the rainfall has been in these other splotches of the province.
Okay, so obviously a lot to pay attention to in the next coming weeks as the growing season starts to wrap up and harvest will, as you said, begin. So Alexis, thanks for joining us today on Between the Rows.
Spencer, it's always great to be here.
Alexis Stockford is a reporter for the Manitoba Cooperator based out of Brandon, Manitoba. You're listening to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Spencer Myers. Last up on today's show is our weekly weather and markets report. This week, we have Bruce Burnett, the Director of Markets and Weather with Glacier Markets Farm. Bruce, can you tell us a little bit about some adverse weather conditions that have been happening a little further away from Winnipeg, where I'm centered? Northern Alberta has been apparently receiving constant rain throughout the last few weeks, leading up to basically flooding conditions. So can you tell us what's going on there?
Well, certainly there's been some heavy rains throughout Alberta, you know, so far this growing season, but especially up in the northern areas of the province and into the Peace River region. These areas, since about the middle of May, have seen pretty constant rainfall. Overall amounts, especially in areas west of Edmonton and some areas of the Peace, have received, you know, even in the month of June here, just over 200 millimeters of precipitation. So certainly some heavy amounts have happened. This is the same area that was trying to get crops harvested and crops planted this spring. So we've seen a disruption to that. And so it really is a sad situation, because what crops did get planted in those areas are now suffering from excess moisture conditions. So it's certainly a concern. It looks as if right now we're probably losing in the order of about 500,000 acres of cropland up in the northern areas of Alberta from this. But certainly the rains haven't stopped here. We've again seen rains over the past week and the past few days, so the pressure continues up in those northern growing areas. Conversely, in other areas of the prairies, these rains have been welcome, because we were on the dry side in some parts of the southern growing areas of Saskatchewan and Alberta, and so the rains that have fallen recently in those areas have actually helped crops.
Okay, so what's I guess what's expected for the weeks to come? You've seen a lot of rain so far. Rain has been needed in some areas of the province. What's the forecast looking like for that region for the next couple weeks?
Well, the problem right now is that we have this very stable weather pattern across the prairies, and that includes essentially a high-pressure dome that's over parts of eastern Saskatchewan and Manitoba, and a ridge that's moved into Alberta that's been a fairly permanent feature. So under that kind of general circulation, you're probably going to see continued rains in the prairies, but especially out in the western prairies. So again, that's not good news. We don't want to see that happen in those areas. Certainly, we have enough moisture. We now need to see some warm, dry conditions. That same temperature, that same pattern also gives us the temperature contrast that we're seeing across the prairies, with some very warm temperatures on the eastern side of the prairies, daily highs up in the upper 20s, low 30s, to highs out in Alberta struggling to reach the 20 degree mark. So that's been a fairly consistent pattern, and we expect that to continue over the next couple of weeks.
And you had mentioned that these temperature contrasts are part of the reason why the prairies have been seeing some pretty extreme weather lately.
Yeah, when you get these huge temperature contrasts between, you know, the major, between the region, in between, there's always going to be the prospect for some severe weather. And that's what we're seeing now. We've seen some conditions that have, you know, severe thunderstorms, heavy rains, hail, high winds. Certainly you just have to look on social media to see the number of bins that have been toppled over here over the past couple of weeks. And that's just because of the fact that we have this temperature contrast, and systems are essentially moving in from the U.S. and bumping into this dome in eastern Saskatchewan, western Manitoba, and then trying, have it being forced to just move through Saskatchewan and Alberta, bringing with it some of these severe weather conditions.
Okay, so we can kind of expect, unfortunately, a little bit of more of that to continue. And Alexis Stockford, our colleague from the Manitoba Cooperator, is giving us an update on the conditions here in Manitoba. So let's jump a little further south. And can you tell us about the crop conditions in the Corn Belt? What's going on further south of us?
Well, certainly the U.S. markets are all now focused on the Corn Belt and Corn Belt growing conditions. Of course, right now the first weeks in July are critical for the U.S. corn crop, because that's when the silking, tasseling phases of growth occur, and these this crop stage is susceptible to moisture stress and high temperatures. We've seen some higher temperatures move into the Corn Belt. There isn't a lot of moisture stress because they have received plenty of rain so far this growing season. One area that's drying out, however, are the areas in the eastern Corn Belt, and this would also include parts of southern Ontario, where we've seen these hot temperatures with some moisture supplies that have started to go downhill. So crops are really getting thirsty in those areas, and that's having the market pay some attention, at least anyway, to these conditions. For the soybean crops, things are going along pretty well. Again, for soybeans, the critical stage is about a month from now, in early August, when those rains are really needed to help fill the pods of the soybean crops. So we have a little bit of time left on the soybean front, but for corn, things appear to be okay, but we are seeing some deterioration in the eastern Corn Belt.
Okay, and my last question, Bruce, is that there is a new WASDE report coming out on Friday. What can people expect to hear from that recent report?
Well, we certainly are going to see an impact on the numbers for the corn and soybeans. We did get an area report last week that indicated there's 5 million acres less of corn. That's going to be reflected in the USDA numbers. That's going to tighten overall conditions for the corn. Again, we have a lot of corn in the U.S. coming this year still, despite that acreage drop. So, you know, again, it's the amount of bullishness is maybe going to be limited from that. The most interesting number that we're going to see on Friday, on the Friday report here from USDA, is going to actually be the spring wheat and Durham numbers, because this is the first crop survey that we're going to see in the northern plains of the U.S. on prospects for the spring wheat and Durham crops. They were quite dry, especially in parts of North Dakota, but these rains that have moved through the prairies also moved through that region, so they've seen some pickup in moisture. We'll have to see what USDA says about crop prospects for the spring wheat and Durham crops.
Okay, well, that sounds good, Bruce. Very informative, as always, and thanks a lot for jumping on Between the Rows today.
Thank you.
That was Bruce Burnett, the Director of Markets and Weather with Glacier Markets Farm. That's all we have for today's show. I've been your host, Spencer Myers, with Glacier Farm Media and the Manitoba Cooperator. Thanks for listening.
Between the Rows podcast is brought to you by Glacier Farm Media and sponsored by FCC Ag Expert, Canada's number one field and accounting software. Try it for free at agexpert.ca.
Hey, do you know what's new and improved? Ag Expert software.
What's that?
Ag Expert? It's field and accounting software designed for Canadian agriculture.
No, that's sparkle sound.
When I say Ag Expert?
Yeah, that.
Well, Ag Expert Field helps you manage your farm. And Ag Expert Accounting is the accounting software in Canadian agriculture. But it's so new and improved, it still has that sparkle to it.
Mm-hmm. Can I use it on my phone?
Of course. It's built for modern agriculture. Try it for free at agexpert.ca.